This is Audible.
The Lords of Silence by Chris Raitt. Read by John Banks.
I imagined that I had encountered all possible cruelties. For a long time, I had understood the worst pain was to be denied that for which we thirsted. The centuries passed, each colder than the last, and that knowledge was the sharpest thorn my father had left in our flesh. But I have been wrong so often before, and so I was again then. In those days, once the despoiler had broken the wheel of fate, and our jail's walls crumbled around us, we learned just how far we still had to go. The greatest cruelty, you see, was not being deprived of what we wanted. The greatest cruelty, as it turned out, was being given it.
Attributed to the Primarch Mortarion. 1. Solace. Chapter 1.
1. 2. 3.
He moves slowly. His claw reaches out, pushing through debris. Lights flicker, sulfur yellow, intermittent, like a failing heartbeat.
4. 5.
He does not want to count. His lips move unbidden, rehearsing well-trodden paths, stabilizing his nervous system. Numbers have power. The subtle know this, but still he does not want to do it.
6.
He pushes himself free of the piles of metal, the heaps of flesh and iron. His boots, cloven like devil hooves, find purchase and push back. He drags himself out of the ruins, his breath wheezing through a rusted vox grill.
7.
That is the perfect number, the one that signifies the accomplishment and the end, but also the conception and then the process. It gives him strength, though he does not wish it to. It has always given him strength, even before the long change, and he dimly remembers this. Now, it is just a habit. So many things are just habits now. He gets back to his feet. Detritus sheds from his back, clattering on the deck. Warning klaxons are sounding from somewhere, muffled and broken. A length of cable as thick as a torso hangs from the roof, glittering with a weak mantle of sparks. The grav field is off kilter. He feels lighter than he should. His old plate should be heavy. It is crusted with the patina of age, thickened and fleshed, scabbed with boils and laced with glistening strings of pulled marrow. He staggers over to a servitor station and sees the wretched operator fused to the deck, its fingers locked into a cat's cradle of sensor plugs. It's dead now, the last strobes of its cortex blown out, which is probably for the best. He presses fat fingers to the command console, summoning status runes across greasy picta crystals. He sees that the ship lives. He sees that Solace's enemy is no longer in view. He wonders how much he aided the starship, or if this is just one more sign that things are running away from him.
Dragon!
He voxes, and gets nothing but static back over the link. Others are beginning to stir now. He sees one of his kindred emerge from under a sagging beam, helm lenses glowing vivid green in the dark. He sees a servitor twitch back into life, its bulbous stomach spilling across a disc-shaped tactical column. He sees a little lord plop down from a fizzing cluster of cabling. It shrieks as it splats on the deck, and he gathers it up carefully. It coos at him, and then nuzzles into the crutch of his elbow, snickering needle teeth. He is beginning to remember now. He is beginning to piece things together again. Is he slower now than he once was? The little lord starts to lick the blood from his cracked ceramite. Of course he's slower. Everything is slowing down, congested, like running through water. That's the gift, of course. That's one of the great objectives. Vaux turns on his heel, patting the little lord absently.
Lumens, if you please, he grunts. Get us moving.
The bridge responds. Crew stagger out of the dark, pull themselves up from behind half-melted cogitator stations, wipe sweat and mucus from their eyes. Around them, solace starts to come to life. It's hard to kill a ship like this. It's hard to kill any of them.
One,
he mutters, starting again. Dragon gets to his knees, snarling. The gun crew slave staggers over to him, perhaps trying to help him. This is a conceit, and he shoves the emaciated human into the wall, hears the faint snap of something osseous breaking. Then he's turning, drawing himself up to his full height. The gun cavern yawns away from him, its roof lost in dark clouds, draped with rotting cables like spider threads. Something big has detonated, hard enough to fry Solace's grav generators and throw the virtual axis off kilter. The ship's a big, bulky beast, so the damage must have been catastrophic and close. He slaps the side of his helm, then again, hard enough to knock some sense back into his incoming visual feed. His mood is dark, and he wonders if the explosion was somehow his failure. If so, that'll be more fodder for Vaux. The gun gangs are coming back to life. Several dozen lie in the murk of the deck, limbs severed or rib cages smashed. A chain-mounted lumen swings lazily over them like a sensor. The nearest gun barrel, a 200-meter-long iron howitzer, rears up through the miasma towards its gunwale sheath. Recoil columns splay out, lodge deep into the substructure. Much of the breach is still made of black metal, a meter thick at its thinnest point, crushingly heavy. Only the edges show creeping evidence of the biological. Strands of hair-thin follicles worming away, glacially slowly. They'll get there in the end, consuming the inorganic and replacing it with the tougher stuff of sinew and cord. 6 meters away, Gunnery Captain Kodad regains his feet. He's one of the more senior of the unchanged, and something like a uniform still clings to his hefty frame. His skin is white-grey and boils cluster at his neckline, but he might even pass for human normal in some of the grimier Imperial hives. Dragon looks into his smeary adjuster lens, then down the long rows of howitzers.
"What's the damage?" he growls.
"Significant,"
Kodad whispers. He always whispers now. Some wasting gift in his vocal cords, most likely.
"It will take time."
Dragon grunts. He can smell promethium mingled with heavier aromas. Solace is bleeding somewhere.
"Did you get a salvo off?"
he asks. Kodad looks at him. His black-in-black eyes are unblinking.
6, Lord.
6?
Rather proud of the crews, Lord.
Dragon grunts again.
Not good enough, though, was it?
He snarls and stalks out towards the exit aperture. His boots suck at the soft, fleshy stuff on the deck, the permanent soup of swill that bubbles and ferments in every crevice.
I'll be back in an hour. Any guns still out of action, I'll flay the loader teams. Get it done.
Vaux heads down from the bridge. As he goes, more lumens flicker back on. A grinding hum breaks out erratically from under the blackened deck plates. Servitors, the name they still give to the panoply of brainstem-clipped monsters who man the lower-level functions of the battleship, scuttle and lurch back into life. Some are almost human-shaped, with 2 legs and 2 arms, and the head they were born with. Most are not. Some are like insects, while others have been almost entirely swallowed into the embrace of the corridor walls, their dried skin fusing with nutrient lines and power cables, until all that remains is a half-glimpsed face. Those faces gape stupidly as Vaux passes, some vestigial recognition response making their jaws twitch. There was a time, Vaux thinks idly, that life and death were clearly delineated things. The human body would persist for a while, discreet from its fellows, before expiring and returning to the mulch. Now, though, every possible shade between the states of living and dying has been exploited. Half of his crew are, to all intents and purposes, semi-dead, or maybe semi-alive, their required service sustained by amalgams of ancient biotech and even older necromancy. He glances at one of the buried servitor faces. It has no eyes, no nose, just an open mouth crammed full of electric strobe lines. Its lower lip spasms. Vaux wonders if it can detect his presence. He reaches out and gently presses a withered cheek. Then he's moving again. There's no use pondering these things too deeply. It's all part of the great panoply, the more than infinite variety that he serves and seeks to propagate. In another reality, he might have had the leisure to study these creatures, to see just how far the boundaries of decay and resilience can be taken before the parameters snap. But that is not, of course, his calling. He works his way down a long spiral stair, wheezing as he goes. His lungs are half full of fluid, and he cannot help but think it a poor gift. Then again, he has thought other gifts were poor in the past, only to discover their genius much later.
"Forgive," he says, speaking softly to the little lord at his elbow.
The tiny demon giggles, then farts liquidly into the crook of his armor. That counts as forgiveness, probably. He reaches his destination. He is a long way down now, buried within the folded heart of Solace's central chamber core. It smells rich here, like old soil. He sees pale worms wriggling through the mouldering metalwork, each barely longer than his fingernail. They glow. They have many eyes and long teeth. Why does a worm need teeth? He's doing it again. Too curious. That's always been his problem. A door stands before him. It is made of wood. The beams are rotten and pocked with a sieve of beetle holes, and it all smells deeply of another world. Corroding iron bars and hinges creak as the door opens, letting a curtain of deep green miasma roll across the threshold. He steps inside and enters a dank chamber of mists and mellow putrescence. Tables, all of them hewn from thick beams of the same rotten wood, groan under the weight of age-spotted books. Candles flicker in their holders, struggling to stay alight against the humidity. Many pairs of tiny eyes blink from the shadows, red and vicious. Clocks tick, archaic mechanisms grind, and a hooked wheel turns slowly against the domed ceiling.
"Were you damaged?" Vaux asks.
A figure swivels in the murk, its face partly hidden by a thick cowl. Under those shadows pulses the evidence of many gifts. Boils, buboes, raised veins that throb with black fluid.
"No, not much,"
the tallyman Philemon replies, greeting Vaux with a nod.
"Too far down here. But you took a beating up there, yes?"
Vaux smiles wryly.
"We are still alive, or what passes for it?"
He looks around. He breathes in the rich air and sees the many little lords squatting on high shelves. They grin back at him, chittering and belching.
"This one took a fall. Perhaps you will look."
He hands his charge to the tallyman, who lifts the doughy bag of flesh up to the flickering light and turns it over in his gauntlets.
"So I see,"
Philemon murmurs to the little lord.
"Perhaps stay here a while. You can assist me."
He reaches into a bag and pulls out something meaty with an eyelash still attached, before feeding it to the diminutive monster. It gurgles delightedly and hops up to the shelf with the rest of them, where a chattering tussle breaks out.
"Solace must be wounded,"
Philemon observes, reaching for a taper to light more candles.
"I feel it, even in these bowels."
"It will recover," Vaux says.
"What happened?"
"I do not know,"
Vaux leans against a heavy pile of books, grimoire and ledgers, some open to reveal webs of inked diagrams and tables.
I thought we had a contest. They landed a few raiding parties, but we matched them in the void.
He shook his head.
The truth will emerge.
Philemon reaches up to scratch his chin. Something pops, and his fingers glisten.
Where does it leave us?
A long way from where we need to be.
Philemon pauses, and the abacus at his belt clinks.
Dangerous.
No more so than normal, says Vaux. Run the numbers, will you? If you want. I need to trust a little more.
Philemon gives him a severe look.
You do, Siege Master. You trust.
All I have left, I think, sometimes.
It's all beginning. I told you that. When the scales tip, you could be happier about it.
Vaux chews at his lip. He can taste blood in his mouth, a thick soup made tangy by acid and gut rot.
Which way do they tip, though, eh?
He ruminates, running a finger down the spine of the nearest book.
We could be sliding down the wrong path. We have done it before.
Philemon snorts and shoots him an exasperated, though oddly affectionate, glance.
There are creatures, aquatic hunters, that are required to move at all times, or they die. That is our model. We stay in the void, we will die. Or Solus will kill you. Or Dragon will, or Garstag. If you pause here, if you think, if you hesitate, they will be feeding your guts to their familiars.
Vaux does not smile.
You've been saying the same thing to me for 100 years.
This year, then, I hope you will listen.
Vaux shrugs. His upper lip twitches, catching on the corroded flecks of his inner helm. He cannot take the helm off anymore. Very few of his warband can, at least those who have been unbroken for some time. They are no longer body and ceramite, but an increasingly intimate meld of the two. That is one of the many hundred reasons they are so hard to kill. Their fusion with their protection is so much more complete than that enjoyed by their imperial cousins.
Run the numbers, he says.
They can only tell you so much, says Philemon.
Better than nothing at all.
Vaux looks up at the little lord, now snoring contentedly, with flecks of skin and keratin on its rolling stomach. He can smell the decay, the falling away of the parchment, the slow collapse of the deck beneath and the roof above. A number is eternal. It is a form, not a body. It is the last thing left when the mind is rotted into a soup of tendrils, only fit for the gluttons of the deep bilge. You can hold on to a number. He wonders sometimes if even the Death Lord does just that, as if a number were a reminder of another possible life in another possible galaxy. He remembers what his master told him on the plague planet, and wonders if he somehow saw this coming. There are those who underestimate Mortarian's subtlety.
I need to know,
he says, turning away from the books and the mold.
Do this for me, please.
Of course, says the Tallyman, watching him go. Whatever you want.